I feel comfortable taking my mask off because I actually shaved this morning, but usually I wear that as a disguise. You know, there's a questionable reason for it, but many businesses these days no longer accept cash. And I know this because I was at a Starbucks store not too long ago, and there on the back of the register, for all of us to see, was this message: "We no longer accept cash. Please use some other form of payment." So I thought, I have a debit card, I'll use that. And I waited for the young woman in front of me who paid with the watch. I'm going like, oh, holy cow, I don't think I can pay with my Timex. But needless to say, I simply just shook my head and said, well, whatever gets you to pay, use it. Do any of you pay with the watch? Oh my goodness, okay, I'm embarrassed. Well, society today is changing rapidly. That's not a surprise to any of us. I'm not sure about you, but I seldom even have any currency in my pocket. Bills are coins. I just have a debit card. That's probably the reason we don't pay attention to what's printed or minted on bills and coins today. If by some small chance you do have coins in your pocket or purse, take a look and you'll see in tiny letters this phrase, "E pluribus unum." Translated, that means from many to one. There's an interesting story to all this usage of phrase and mottos on our U.S. currency. Way back in 1776, John Adams, Ben Franklin, and several others proposed to use the phrase "E pluribus unum" as a way of recognizing some new nation that they're calling America. Now, contrary to popular belief, I was not there at the time. So I can only report about this bit of history that I learned in my Google search. The phrase wasn't used on coinage until 1786 by the state of New Jersey. And in 1795, it became the designation for all monies in the new Americas. The other phrase you might find on some of our monies is this: "In God we trust." We won't open that can of worms except to share a few facts about where that came from and when it began. Seems that in 1955, two men wanted to build on what was happening in the United States with the resurgence of religion that had a connection to the aftermath of World War II. Who were they? Well, try this. President Dwight Eisenhower and his preacher guy friend, Billy Graham. So in July of 1955, Eisenhower signed into law a mandate that said, "In God we trust" must be included on all U.S. currency. The first paper bills finally included that phrase in 1957. But here's a little secret. Coins that were minted during the Civil War also all had that phrase on them. Our founding fathers would have avidly opposed this as a violation of their stance on the separation of church and state. And that argument continues today, but that's not our focus. That's just a little history lesson for us. E pluribus unum, for many, one. On the surface, that would cause someone to think that all the differences in our country make us one nation. Oh, and did I tell you that Eisenhower also added the phrase "under God" to the Pledge of Allegiance? One nation, under God, indivisible, blah, blah, blah. And you know the rest. It would be ideal if it were true that we were indeed one nation. But in reality, we aren't, and we haven't been since the time of the first colonists who came to claim their lands that had belonged to the indigenous people, these native Indian tribes. During those first decades of European invaders, white people came to make a new home that did not include Native Americans. The history of Native Indians will paint a rather dark picture of what happened to the people and their lands at the hands of those white rulers. A century and a half later, the racial mixture of this nation became much more complicated. Slavery brought in thousands and tens of thousands of Africans and others that added to the diversity of mixing the races. What about Chinese and Asians who were brought into the white man's world to build railroads and do the mining, work that nobody else wanted to do? The concept of from many, one, took on an entirely different tone. Then came a time of war called the Civil War, where one side wanted to maintain control of a white world while another side advocated for unity and the abolition of slavehood. And the mix of races began to be truly mixed. Today, we here in the United States are a proud mixture of races and ethnicities that often boggles my small little brain. You want to get a glimpse of that? Go to a Costco and sit at the little eating area and just watch and see who comes and goes. I live in the Linwood area, where the Asian population in 2010 was 8%. Today, that number is 40%. It isn't only the race of individuals that spans a broad spectrum, but it's their whole strange bucket of religion that will get your head to spinning. The original colonists who came to the new land often came to escape religious persecution. Protestants had broken away from the Pope's realm and they feared for their lives. And others brought with them their own religious traditions. Don't want to frighten you, but one of the first colonies in the New World was devoted to and formed by Baptists. What were they thinking? I apologize for that. And like I said, contrary to what you might hear or believe, I wasn't in that first congregation either. Today, our religions are such a wide variety, it's difficult to even make a comprehensive list of them. There are faith communities from almost every tradition that you can think of. Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, Muslim, Hindu, Taoist, and Unitarians, to name just a few. That doesn't even begin to identify all of the many ways people choose to exercise their faith or to have no faith at all. Agnostics, atheists, and you name it. And how can we say that all of these faith choices, we can be one of anything? Let me be personal for a moment here. As you know, I'm a minister in the American Baptist Church. That's the progressive branch of that category. And Dr. Martin Luther King was one of us. But did you know that at one time there were more than 150 different varieties of Baptists? Today it numbers more than 170 varieties of Baptists. That's pretty scary. The reality for us is that it isn't the list of faiths nor the number of churches. It's what's inside those buildings that causes us to question this out of many one concept. When we look at the statistics of who is actually a part of a denomination, the reality is that we are more one than many. I'll use my congregation as an example. When I stand in the pulpit there and look out on those occupying seats, there is only one color, one race, one structure of beliefs. So where are the many? And not to be critical, but my experience in speaking to several congregations is the same. One color, one race, one tradition. Out of many, one. Out of one, many. I won't frighten you by even mentioning the divisiveness of our society's politics. Do you think there's a oneness in the 100-member Senate, or the 435-member House, or the 9 members of the Supreme Court? Do you know the last time our Congress was united as one? Think about the motion to condemn the attacks on the Twin Towers of New York, the Pentagon, and a crash plane in Pennsylvania. We've named it September 11 or 9/11. There has not been one united law or motion since then, and it's doubtful there will be one anytime soon. From many, one? Probably not in our politics, but I will add something. This past week, 411 members of the House of Representatives, all in unison, voted about relaying the information about the COVID virus. That's the first time they've done anything together since 9/11. Do you know what the most interesting aspect of this whole oneness is for me? It's the idea of one language. We all speak English as our primary language, right? So let me ask you, do we all speak the same English? The answer to that is absolutely no. Growing up in the South, people's residents could be easily recognized by the way they talked. It wasn't uncommon for me to be in dialogue with someone in college or anywhere in church and ask, well, what part of the North are you from? Or, aren't you from Georgia? Or, how'd you get here from Texas? We all spoke differently. Now I'm married to someone from Europe, Croatia actually, and I'm always well aware that we speak English in a very different way. That's interesting in itself. Back in the 1990s, when the internet became a learning spot for all of us, I was in a Yahoo chat club for English teachers and prospective writers. And one day a gentleman joined our group asking for help. He was from another country and had to gain more skills of speaking and reading English so he could pass the entrance exam and finish his university degree. So he asked me if I would let him send me emails, then I would correct his English and send it back to him. That's how it all began. And now, after that encounter in 1999, we've been together almost 24 years and married for the last 10. One funny example of this diversity was when he was talking to my youngest sister, who is a true Southerner. They call her Peaches. Her name is Libby. So she asked him some questions to talk about his country. And he does talk quickly, so you have to listen closely. So when she asked him about his home country and he began a descriptive tour of Croatia, when he stopped to pause, my sister in her deep southern drawl said, "Honey, I didn't understand a word you said." But we all speak the same English, don't we? No, we don't. It isn't that we don't all speak English. It's that there are hundreds of languages spoken here. Seems more sensible to say from one to many. I wish I spoke another language other than Southern English. I did take Spanish and Italian during my high school and college days, and believe it or not, I took Latin for 3 years. Wasted time. But also, I can only say a simple hello in any language other than English. And with that, I say, hi, y'all. But it's also about what we say as much as the language we use. One example that comes to mind is the word we hear every day now, woke. Sit down and talk to young people today and see if you can grasp every word they say. There isn't only one way of speaking in this country, and there's not only one way of speaking in the church. Celebrate that oneness that comes from many of you. So if there isn't any one single thing that comes from the many of us, what's the purpose of having a motto like E Pluribus Unum? The answer that comes to my mind is this. Though we come from many different races and ethnicities, from many different heritages and histories, that we speak different languages, have different cultural traditions, worship in different ways, and live in different spaces, we are all just basically one thing, human beings. Sadly, the problem that we encounter today tend to come from the push to make us all the same, from many to one. Too many people today want us to think, believe, and behave just like them, not only speak and look like them. Be white, speak clear English. Since we're here in a church, we have to point the finger at ourselves now. Don't we want people to believe we like we do, worship like we do, sing like we do, be passionate about social justice like we are? We're pushing people to follow the rule, from many to one. Copy us, be like us. But churches will never flourish if that's the mission it follows. If there is not a celebration of the varieties and diversities of those who choose to be a part of this fellowship or any other, then we should print in large letters at our door, E Pluribus Unum, and forget that sign that says everyone welcome here. But here at SUF, one thing I've found, from many of you, there is one family of faith that has been an inspiration to me for many years, and I am grateful for that. In the future, if I find myself with a coin or two in my pocket, I'm going to give some heavy thought to those words engraved on that penny or dime or nickel or quarter. The hitch is going to be that using a debit card doesn't give you coins back when you purchase something. Until then, I'll just find a lot of joy in remembering that I am one of the many. I'm one human being among millions. Of course, I'm a superior variety, even if I have roots that can be traced back to my mother's birthplace of Possum Neck, Mississippi. And there aren't many there to form one anything, although the 26 people who live there now are all grandmas from my mother's family. But remember this, when you see or hear these words, E Pluribus Unum, you are one special human being of the many. It's your heritage, yours and mine. And here at SUF, always remember that from many, you have made one, a wonderful family of faith. But continue to celebrate the varieties that each of you bring, because none of you are alike. None of you have the same beliefs. None of you have the same voice. But together, you have become one. And that, I think, is an accomplishment you should pat yourself on the back for.